Freeport had started as a small to medium-sized mine in the 60s. And in the late 1980s, they discovered probably the world's largest gold deposit and either the first or the second largest copper deposit in the world. And that instantly transformed Freeport into the largest single mine in the world. So at that point, I think they realized that they were going to have to do something. They were going to be exposed to a lot more scrutiny, and they were going to have to do something about basic community rights, compensation, and all the sorts of issues that have been glossed over for the previous 25 years. So they invited us across in 1994, and together with a colleague, Glenn Banks, I visited the site, and I think we were, it's fair to say, flabbergasted at conditions, at the lack of any consultation or any compensation paid to local communities, the lack of any consideration of them in any way as stakeholders in these projects. And then very quickly we became aware that there were also massive human rights abuses that had taken place and had not been substantially reported.
Can you describe what the military and police presence is like in the region?
Yes, it's extremely oppressive. Indonesian troops in West Papua tend to regard it as a recalcitrant part of the country that was taken largely, in their view, by force from the Dutch in 1962-63, and is filled with largely ungrateful Papuans who don't resemble Indonesians and don't act like Indonesians elsewhere in the country. So there's an extremely high degree of suspicion between Indonesian forces and most indigenous Papuans. And that's palpable when you're there in Timika. There are wheeled armored cars that go up and down the roads. There are helicopters, fixed-wing planes, special forces troops. I can remember the first night that we arrived in 1994, and it was on the occasion of one of these black operations where the military had killed a Freeport driver and mocked it up to look like an OPM attack. And we drove up to the mine site with both sides of the street lined with troops carrying M16 rifles and military helicopters flying overhead. And the only analogy I could think of was the cinematic one, and that was Vietnam. It's interesting that for the first 20 years, there were almost no military at all. I think one small platoon for a while. And it was only with the advent of these black operations and with the recognition in Jakarta that this was going to be a staggeringly wealthy operation that it was felt that they would need to have substantially larger numbers of troops. And now every single unit of the Indonesian Army, Navy and Air Force has some sort of representation in the area, largely as a means of latching onto Freeport money. I think there are something like 2,400 armed forces now in the area.
Freeport has spent $152 million on a community development fund that has provided hospitals, schools and roads, to name a few things for the region. Have you seen the results of their funding? Has the company provided a better standard of living for the local Papuans?
Various ways of answering that question. Yes, they have, in the sense that there are now schools and hospitals. By and large, people have a higher standard of living than they would have before the mine was there. But I think you could also fairly argue that after almost 40 years of the world's richest mine operating in their area, people could fairly be entitled to considerably more than that. After all, even at Bougainville, the mine in Papua New Guinea, which has become such a sort of a byword for infamy within the mining industry, there was training within 10 years for local Bougainvillians, and they now permeate the upper echelons of the Papua New Guinea elite and the mining industry. That's not been the case in around Freeport at all for either Amungme or Comoro. There are still no high-level managers and very few higher-level employees who are from those local communities. And after almost 40 years, that's perhaps the most damning indictment of the company's attitude towards the communities.
Now, onto a different topic. Have you witnessed the environmental damage the mine has caused in that region? And if so, could you describe what you've seen?
Well, anyone flying into Timika witnesses the damage because you fly over this large grey floodplain, which is the result of the vast quantity of overburden of tailings, both that's dumped while they're stripping overburden off the top of the ore body, and then once they're processing the ore body and extracting the gold and copper, and that all gets pumped into the local rivers. And once it hits the flats around Tabika, the level floodplain, it just spreads out and the river braids and redistributes it. This is an area that's lying right alongside the Lawrence World Heritage listed park and is now in danger of flowing into that park and contaminating it as well. And on the latest satellite images, and you can now, of course, using Google Earth, look at these images. There's a noticeable plume of sediment heading out into the Arafura Sea. This is north of Darwin from mine sediment. So within the corridor that the mine operates in, there's enormous environmental impact. There are two other forms of impact. Obviously, there's the complete loss of the mountains that have been removed, the Grasberg and the Erzberg. Both of these were formerly sacred to Amungme, and tribes on both sides of this range associated these mountain peaks with dead ancestors. But there was obviously no inquiry or consultation into those sorts of issues before the mine proceeded. Those are now pits where mountains used to be. And there's another more hidden form of environmental impact, and that is acid rock drainage, ARD. And this occurs when rock brought up from deep mines oxidizes and releases acid into the environment. And what we're discovering is that the pattern of channeling subsurface means that the acid doesn't necessarily just flow downstream in obvious ways. It's spreading both to the west and the east through subterranean channels and appearing in streams that then flow into the Lawrence National Park, World Heritage Park.